Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 389, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you're listening to the show and would like to support us, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is, of course, James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Jason, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. We've got our second episode in a row where we're talking about new watches. It's, we've got a trend going here.
You know, of all the logical times to launch a ton of new watches, why not do it in the very last week that we have to enjoy the summer?
Yeah, right.
This definitely, Geneva Watch Days couldn't be in like 10 days and then it would, you know, just suit the back to school season and the rest of it, but whatever. At least there's some pretty exciting watches coming out this week. I thought some of the stuff we chatted about last week was pretty fun as well.
Yeah.
It'll be a watch packed episode. So why don't we kick it off with a little bit of housekeeping, if you will?
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about, we always kick off at the Toronto Timepiece Show, but let's hold that and talk about the Strap Habit TGN 10 strap, which you know, if people remember, we did a kind of a limited drop of that Dazzle Camo NATO strap, courtesy of Strap Habit, a couple of months ago, and it sold out immediately, much to our surprise. And so Nick was kind enough to order up a new batch, and he's offered them. We kind of announced those to our crew first, and he's got a good number left over, which he's now selling on his website directly. So go and check that out. We'll throw a link in the show notes. This is a strap that the Dazzle Camo pattern was inspired by the packaging for our crew watch number one, which we released with CWC. And has a little kind of Easter egg on the back with the TGN 10 kind of integrated into the camo pattern. So we're really pleased with this strap, and it seems to be quite popular. So if you do want one, they're not going to last forever, but they are currently available on Strap Habit's website.
You know it. That's a good one. And yeah, nice to see those. I've been getting a ton of wear out of mine as the summer heat and sort of bright colors and all that sort of thing continues. It's nice as a guy who doesn't wear much in the way of bright colors to have a little bit of an orange accent. And I've been enjoying mine quite a bit. They do suit a wide range of watches, but you can't go too orange on the watch, I find.
Yeah, that's true. I've gotten, you know, I'm also in the same boat as you. I don't wear a lot of brightly colored watches or straps. And when I do wear this one, I tend to get compliments from people that, you know, they almost don't even notice the watch. They kind of ask about the strap, and then they have to tell the whole weird story about Dazzle Camo and about TGN and all that kind of thing. But it's a cool
thing. Their eyes glaze over.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
All right. We do have the Toronto Timepiece Show coming up September 26th and 27th. We will have a live show on the Saturday, the 26th. That'll be from noon to 1:30. And then we're working on a gear swap with RZE. So if you're in town and can bring around your pens, your other gear, your things that you might want to swap, your fidget toys, your EDC nonsense, your bags, that sort of thing. We did some of that in Vancouver with Revolver Coffee, and it was a really great time. So we're going to do that sometime that afternoon. Details forthcoming as we're trying to find a home for it. And then in that evening, we will have our party with Marathon. So this will be what the third outing for this party. Mm-hmm. It'll be at the same location as last year. If you came last year, it's going to be a very good time, and the RSVP will be out next week. So by the time we get to episode 390, you should be able to find the RSVP in the show notes. And if you're on the Slack, you'll have a crack at it a little bit before that, but should be a very good time. One other thing to add is the organizers of the show have offered now VIP tickets, which include additional access to brands and activities. And I believe the opening Friday night event, which is more of a mingle, you know, rub shoulders, elbows, that sort of thing, have a drink or two. Those tickets are on the site. And I did ask, and Jason Hutton confirmed that if you had a standard ticket and you wanted to upgrade to a VIP, you'll get a credit for the original ticket as well.
Oh, nice.
We'll put that link in the show notes, and we hope to see everybody there. We are recording this inside of the same month. It is September 1st.
Yeah, I can't tell you how excited I am for that Saturday. I think that's going to be just like a day when I'll be buzzing all day from our show, and then a gear swap. I mean, I hadn't really thought much about it. You've been talking about it for a while, and I didn't get to the one in Vancouver, obviously. So I'm really curious about this. And as someone who just moved house and kind of was culling things and kind of looking sideways at stuff that I ended up transporting from one house to the other, I'm thinking might have to pack an extra bag with some some gear to shed and hopefully not come home with too much.
You might end up having to take some back as well.
I know, yeah.
But yeah, the one in Vancouver was cool. There was sort of a collection of, you know, little pocket knives, other sort of EDC stuff, bags, interesting clothing, like some cool jackets. Right, and like just people had some neat stuff that they brought out that was good.
Yeah.
You know, you end up with, in this world, you do kind of end up with that stuff where like, it's good, but it's not, I've never really found it to be needed in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's way too nice to take to, say, Goodwill. But you'd be delighted if a friend was like, oh, I'll take that. I would wear that every day, or I would carry that or whatever. Like, that's always great. And it's that kind of a thinking. But we'll do hopefully somewhere that does food and drinks, and we can have a nice little hangout for a couple of hours on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start making a pile and pack a bag.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really fun. Cool. Stay tuned for that kind of stuff. That'll be very casual. It'll be a drop-in, hangout, that sort of thing. So no, don't be super concerned. And then we believe there'll be plenty of space for the party that evening. Certainly for TGN listeners. So stay tuned for the RSVP for that, but pretty straightforward. All right, with the housekeeping out of the way, what have you been up to the last week?
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting week, actually, last week. I hinted on last week's episode that I had planned a very quick turnaround trip back to Chicago, within a month or, 5 or 6 weeks of going there for Wind Up Chicago. And it was an interesting trip. Christy and I flew down there. I had a couple of free points related tickets on Delta and wanted to spare us the 12 hours of driving over a 24-hour period. And we flew in the night before. This was last Wednesday, and then got up on Thursday. And I actually went and met a very kind TGN listener, David. David, I hope you don't mind me mentioning. David's a fairly common name, so if you want to remain anonymous, there are a few other Davids certainly in our crew. Met David for coffee in the morning, and then we were there actually to do a car handoff. He had an old Prius that he was looking to shed, and Christy's daughter was looking for a new car. So it was kind of a really fortuitous kind of connection, and David really offered a very nice deal on that car, and it went to Christy's daughter, who had taken the train in from Detroit. So it's kind of this weird confluence of all of us getting together in Chicago and did the handoff. Got to have coffee with David and his lovely dog Fig, and then we parted ways. So it was a quick trip, but it was really satisfying, and perhaps best of all. Well, I shouldn't say best of all, because all of it was good. I took Christy to Tanoshi for sushi the night we arrived.
Oh yeah.
For those not familiar, Tanoshi is the sushi place on Randolph. I learned this time that it's actually called Tanoshi Sushi Mike's is actually the name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know who Mike is, but maybe the founder. And I actually had the same server that you and I had. I think his name is Dave. And
very nice.
And it was great. He greeted us at the door, and I said, hey, I was just here a little over a month ago with my buddy James, and we had this lavish, wonderful meal, and you were a great server. And he said, oh yeah, I remember you guys, the Watch Podcast guys. And I said, yeah, I don't think we mentioned that to him. Maybe we did, but he said, we've had a few visitors based on your podcast. So thank you for mentioning us on the podcast. So gave us a free, extra free sushi roll along with our other big order. And we just had a lovely time at Tanoshi. So that was great. And then I got home on Thursday, and then Friday, I went for lunch with a couple of other TGN listeners who happened to be members of a popular band, Vertical Horizon. They were in town to perform at the Minnesota State Fair, and they reached out me like the week prior and said, we're going to be in town. Do you want to come to the show? And I couldn't because of this Chicago trip and some other things. But they said, let's meet for lunch. And so we did and had a great time. It was Matt and Wes. Matt, I believe, is the founder, lead singer, songwriter for Vertical Horizon. And then Wes is the guitarist. And he's also done some work with a band called Porcupine Tree, which I had not heard of. But he turned me on to Porcupine Tree. And if you haven't heard of Porcupine Tree, check out the song. I think it's called Anesthetize on YouTube. It's a 17-minute jam, the live version. Wes plays the guitar in this. It was from, I don't know, a decade ago or so. In my reading, Porcupine Tree was inspired by kind of the prog rock scene, sort of Pink Floyd-esque, really popular in the 90s and 2000s. Really great music. It really turned me on to a new band. So that was fun. And just, they couldn't have been nicer guys. And Wes was wearing a black-on-black current-gen GMT Master II and And Matt was wearing a vintage Seiko Diver, which was really, really cool. I think it's a 6215 with the monoblock case from the mid-60s. And
Nice.
Just good stuff. And we had a great lunch and good chat and made a couple of new friends. So it was a fun week, really a fun week.
That's great. Yeah, I've met Matt a couple of times at various Hodinkee events. I remember very early on in sort of my time being officially kind of linked with Hodinkee, we did this UTA event in LA in Beverly Hills, and Matt came out and we chatted for some time for a podcast recording, and just an absolutely lovely guy. So I'm glad you got to connect with both of them. That's great.
Yeah, it was fun. How about you? You were in a different big city for a social event.
Yep. Yeah, I went down and did my usual couple of days in New York. Got to do an absolutely fantastic outing of the Hodinkee Happy Hour at the Soho Watches of Switzerland store. It was rainy, so maybe 10-15 people didn't come that we'd planned on or thought would come, but there was plenty of beer, there's plenty of pizza. Got a chance to hang out with a handful of folks, including, you know, big shout out to Alec and to Tom Place. Always nice to see you guys, which was a delight. And then, as I hinted in the previous one, I'm not going to get too deep into it, as I am absolutely in the weeds of trying to decide if I want to import and transport a vehicle from the New York area. But I was able to catch up with Tom the next day over some coffee, and then he was kind enough to take me to the airport after I'd gone for a little test drive. So, it was a great outing. I got back in time for dinner that evening here in Toronto, and then we were at the cottage this weekend. It was another sort of rainy, slow weekend. Only real highlight for me would be we got through some cousins, we got like a bike seat for my son, so he can sit kind of between me and the handlebars.
Oh, I've seen those. Yeah.
Did I send you a photo of this?
No.
You'll get a giggle out of the photo. Let me send it while we're recording here. So it's kind of an earlier generation of that idea of like with the kids ride shotgun, and like my son's a year, so it's not like the little floating seat. Oh, it's more of a bucket, like with leg control and all that sort of thing. But there's the picture of him on my nice large bike, and so we've been riding a fair bit, and we did a couple rides around the cottage.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So yeah, there he is. He just fits. He's a big guy for a year, but he likes it a lot. And we got him a pair of sunglasses because he was just squinting the whole time. So yeah, we've been having a good time with that. And that's kind of a delight. So, you know, in the last few weekends, we've had space in the van to throw the bike in. So when we get up there, we'll go biking, and my parents have been at the cottage for the last couple of weeks. So, we've got someone to bike with and that sort of thing. It's been good.
Great. Wow. Nice. Yeah. Squeezing the last bit out of summer here, huh?
For sure. Yeah. I'm just deep into Claude recommending checklists of things you have to do to import a vehicle, to Canada. I'm not convinced it's something I'm capable of doing all on my own, at this point in my life, but, it doesn't look incredibly complicated, but I'm not sure it's something with someone in the two jobs needs to be getting into. So, if you're listening and you're on the Slack or whatever, and maybe this is something you've done before or have some feedback on, let me know. We're kind of in the deciding phase of these things. You know, storage, transport, import, and storage is a way bigger issue than the vehicle and its price.
Oh, yeah.
As that's how these things go, I guess.
Well, I hope you get it, because I've seen pictures, and I think after the headaches, you know, hopefully it'll give you years of enjoyment. It's you sent me a picture, and it's pretty awesome. So
it's a very pretty thing for sure. And if it becomes real, there'll be an episode about it, of course, because I might have to drive it back up, at which point it'll leave me on the side of the road, and I will I will record an episode while we wait, or call you or something on FaceTime.
There you go. Oh my god.
That's all the catch up I think we need. We've got some wrist check, and then we've got a ton of new watches to talk about. Do you want to dive into the wrist check?
Yeah, sure. I can be quick about this. Got my Vertex Monopusher MP45 on. I picked up interestingly. You know, do you remember, this was a long time ago, you had sourced those kind of woven, I don't know, I suppose they're kind of a sailcloth adjacent canvas looking textured fabric strap off of Amazon. I think it's called the T-strap. It is called the T-strap. I know now.
Yep.
With a black buckle for the Aqualand back in the day. And I've always liked that strap, but the 24 millimeters only works on the Aqualand, basically. But I really like that strap, and I wanted something. Well, first of all, I wanted one for my Zin 144 with a black case. I told you I'm kind of picky about hardware matching the case, and I wanted something with a black buckle. And I just thought kind of a green or gray version of that strap with a black buckle would look fantastic on that watch. And I can now say that it does. I had to dig back through our text message exchanges, our history, and kind of Google Amazon strap or something like that. Or not Google, but search in the messages. And I found your link. And so I ordered a couple. I ordered the black buckle version for the Zin. And then I also got one with a silver buckle that I now have on the MP45. And it just, it looks great. I love the strap. And it was $10, you know, so I don't feel too bad about that. It was great.
Nice. Yeah. I'm a fan of these. Not all straps need to be a fortune. You know, there's a time and a place for the handmade Nick Gabarro stuff. And there's a time and a place for your strap habit stuff. You know, the TGN strap's $35. And then for me, definitely there's a time and a place for like $15, $10, like nylon straps from Amazon. And that's what I had been wearing the Doxa on quite frequently. Was just a cheap strap from Amazon. Sometimes it's not worth overthinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. You got something fun, which I can't wait to see in a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, this might be the thing that you take home from the gear swap. I don't know. That's kind of what I put it on. I haven't really connected with it. And I think it's a strap problem. But also, there aren't that many options.
Yeah.
And this is the Bell & Ross BR0392 Aviation or Avia. It's the full size, you know, the 0392 sized Annie Digi Bell & Ross.
Yeah.
I traded my 200T Diving Star for it. And while I'm, you know, fine with that outcome, I now have the Hodinkee 200T Army. I've worn this a bit and I it's not that I don't like it. It's that every time I look down at it, it's like I'm not looking at my wrist. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. I've got it on the sort of like Bell & Ross style leather, which is like got to be 27, 28 millimeters wide beyond the lugs.
Oh my gosh.
So it's this big chunk and like I have a 7-inch wrist, but it's, you know, it just maybe doesn't quite look right.
Yeah.
And the watch came with a lot of different strap options, including these sort of hook and loop nylon. And those work okay. Mm-hmm. But I wanted some rubber. But then I, you know, the two or three places I was looking to pick up a rubber strap, like they either didn't have they only had like the bright orange or like a weird camo one in stock. And so I haven't really bonded with it is maybe the right way to say it.
Yeah.
It's a very cool watch. And when I see it on a table next to the other watches I have, I'm like, oh, that thing's rad. but then I put it on and I go like, I don't want to wear this for more than a little bit of time. So yeah, I haven't quite linked up with it. Maybe it'll end up at the gear swap here. Maybe it's something that you end up actually liking, or maybe somebody from the Slack is keen. I'm open to options. You know, I definitely am not in a place where I need more watches, and I definitely don't need any that I'm not wearing or that don't, you know.
Right.
What does that lady say? Spark joy.
Oh yeah.
Marie Kondo. And so yeah, that's my update on the Bell & Ross, but I've been wearing it. I wore it all morning, just got back from a very infuriating dentist appointment for my daughters.
Good angry watch.
Oh yeah. Well, cranking out like multiple stories for embargoes for Geneva Watch Days.
Yeah.
This episode comes out after Geneva Watch Days main embargoes run. So we're able to chit chat about these sorts of things a little bit ahead of time. And I think that's as good a bridge as any to jump into some of the new watches that have come out. I don't know exactly the route I'd want to take through all these watches, but I do think I want to start with the new Tudor.
Oh, I think that's a good place to start. It's very TGN. Yeah, I would say it's my favorite of the bunch, I think, that we're going to talk about as I scroll through the list here.
It definitely feels the closest to something that I would want from a lot of these. There's a couple others that are actually very similar in idea that I like a lot. But yeah, what we're talking about is the morning that we are recording this, just a few hours earlier, Tudor launched the second generation of the North Flag. I believe you can call it a second generation, even if the first generation was discontinued. A few notable differences. It's a little thinner. It's definitely shorter lug to lug. North Flag is now one word. And instead of having, you know, the integrated bracelet and a power reserve, it's integrated bracelet and now has like dual time.
Mm-hmm.
I lament to call it GMT because I'm a picky jerk sometimes. And GMT typically requires some sort of a rotating bezel to augment for GMT. I understand that that's maybe too picky for most folks. I would call this a dual time watch. Tudor calls it a GMT watch. I suppose it doesn't matter one way or another now, does it?
I am quite smitten with this watch, and I think you and I were just chatting. Well, I guess it was yesterday. It wasn't exactly a big surprise when Tudor posted on Instagram. They said where it began, and they posted the old, I think it was the Ranger 2 with the integrated bracelet.
Ranger 2,
fluted
yeah.
bezel and kind of those big blocky numerals on the dial. And I thought, maybe a new North Flag, or maybe they're going to do something like a Ranger 2. And I think I wrote to you and I said, do you think there'll be a new North flag? Which of course you didn't know because Tudor keeps their cards close to their chest.
I don't know anything in advance.
But I'm really smitten with this. I really loved the original one, but at the time I remember, you know, this was way back, you know, late 2010s or 2020 or 2021 or thereabouts. And it was just a watch that was kind of the early days of Tudor using their in-house movement that they developed with Kanisi. And it was kind of an oddball, right? I mean, it was an integrated bracelet.
It was
that
kind
of cool fabric strap, which I kind of wish they would have with this one, and maybe they will someday. And it had that power reserve, which I kind of liked. I liked the little flash of color.
Yep.
I like this one quite a bit.
So, I mean, just on the basics, there's still both the first gen and the second gen were 40 millimeter models. The new one is 12.7 thick and 48.8 lug to lug. Also, moving forward, just a little bulletin, I'm rounding to a single decimal point when it comes to case dimensions. I'm getting, you know, press releases this week that were the case is 13.09 millimeters thick. Okay. And you're like, guys,
come on.
Yeah. So yeah, 12.7 and 48.8 for the new one, compared to 40 by 13.3 by 50 millimeters. So it's noticeably more compact on paper. I have not seen this watch in person, to be clear. I believe the folks from Hodinkee who are in Geneva for Geneva Watch Days will get to see it, and I'm hoping I can see it in the next couple weeks around Toronto if we get lucky. So it's a little bit thinner, a little bit less lug-to-lug. Water resistance is 100 meters, and then it uses the same movement as the FXD GMT. So you have local jumping, and that is going to be coordinated against a 24-hour Riot. Which I think between the Riot and the deletion of the power reserve really does make this look like, if you put them next to each other in photos, very different watches. This new one is much more conventional, much more middle of the road, whereas the old one really had a character that was all its own. It was a little bit of an oddball. It was really beloved or derided for its design language. Mm-hmm. And if you really compare the two, there's just the original is much more stark. I would say in many ways, what I'm saying is almost like what I would say between a 500 meter Pelagos and a Pelagos 39.
Yeah.
Right. They made a more conventional model with more conventional finishing with the brush to this and the sunray that, and here you kind of have the same thing where they've preserved the colorway, but the hands are a little bit more delicate. You have the 24 hour Riot, you have a more standard sort of take on a minute track and that sort of thing. I think this watch will be very successful, but I can also fully understand people who are like, I really liked how specific the first one mm-hmm. was. At the same time, very similar things. And if you're really nerdy about these things, they're very different.
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll be popular, and maybe because it is more conventional, they'll get a wider audience. But if I had to choose, I mean, it kind of makes me start looking around at old ones and you know, see what's around, because it sort of rekindled my interest. And actually, I'd kind of forgotten about the old North flag. I do wish they'd kind of kept them as separate words, too. I like the North flag as two words, but yeah, it's a minor thing. Cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm in the zone of being that picky. You know, the original one launched at $3,675 mm-hmm. USD in 2015, and that's $5,200 today.
Mm.
And this one launched at $5,525. So I still think we're within the ballpark at least of inflation.
Yeah.
And I think this is also right in what we would call like the meat and potatoes of Tudor's price point these days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But not a limited edition is available theoretically immediately, but only via Tudor boutiques.
Mm.
Yeah, so a solid thing. I'm quite excited about this. Obviously, big fan of GMTs. Less a fan of integrated bracelet sport watches, which we actually talked about just recently. But I think this works pretty well. And I think it, you know, with the last one having been gone since 2021, I don't think you can say that this one is taking anything away if you preferred the last one. It's been, you know, 5 years since you had a swing at one of those.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that this isn't the North Flag 2, the two time zones.
Oh, yeah.
That sort of thing, rather than just another North Flag. But yeah, you know, this is Tudor doing it again. We're seeing they like yellow this year. 2026 is a very yellow year for Tudor.
Mm-hmm.
And they also like single SKUs. This is offered as one SKU. You get the bracelet. It has T-fit. It's mostly brushed. There's little polished accents on parts of the links and little elements of the case. But otherwise, I think nicely executed and one I'm pumped to see in person.
Bravo. All right. Good place to start.
Where do you want to head next?
Well, I mean, you've got it on the list next, and I think it kind of makes sense because I think it, we mentioned before we started that the Strom expedition is kind of North Flag adjacent. It kind of looks similar, I think, in some ways. A little more, I think we talked to a little more kind of Scandinavian, and it's got a little bit more, I would say, a youthful look to it, but largely kind of the same formula.
Yeah, it's certainly not dissimilar, a sort of sport forward. Obviously, it's called Expedition. It is far from the only watch to use that name. But from the moment I got the press release for this watch, I was interested. This feels like the sort of watch that maybe isn't for everybody. And I don't think Strom has to make hundreds of thousands of watches, of course. But it definitely feels like it's for me. You know, I've seen some of the Strom stuff in the past at the Toronto show. You know, the previous models that they've optioned, like the Jan Mayen and some of the special editions under within that vibe, I really liked, especially when they started to offer the option of switching the bracelet to the rubber strap. Mm-hmm. And now we have the Expedition, which comes in either a loom dial, a gray dial, or a limited edition to like grade 5 titanium dial. And yeah, so on the rubber, pricing is $2,750 and it's $3,100 on a grade 5 titanium bracelet. If I was buying something, I would be wanting to get both of those options to switch between them, assuming that's available in an option. This is a time and date watch with the Le Jupre LJP G100, which is 68 hours and 4 hertz. It is not a chronometer, which feels like it could be at this price point, or it's something they should look into. 100 meters of water resistance, and then the case is 38.2 by 11. So very nice sizing, I think. I know Griffin, one of the latest editor to be added to the Hodinkee roster, Griffin Barsh, shout out Griffin, he's got one or two of them in for review. So we'll have more sort of hands-on look in the future. But I'm hoping these are the sort of thing I see either at Toronto Show or at Wind Up in New York.
Yeah.
Because they speak to me in sort of in a similar way to the Laventure stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's elements of several watches that I see in this. I mean, I even look at the profile view and it does have that same downward sloping kind of integrated lug design of the North Flag. I mean, very much, and that's fresh in our minds now, obviously. From the front, you know, there's a little bit of kind of Nautilus in that crown guard. It's just and then the strap definitely conjures the Laventure as well, that sort of interesting rubber strap. But it's a cool watch. I would love to see one of these in person, and I do hope they're in Toronto. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah. But we got two. We'll be at two shows in the next little while. Ideally, they're at one of them. We've definitely seen them in Toronto in the past. So a big shout out to Strom and their continued work. I think the Expedition looks quite good.
Yeah.
And definitely something I want to see more of in person in the future.
Yeah, right.
All right, moving on from there, we get into stuff that like literally is launching in the next couple of days, I guess, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start with a little Miles Davis? I
mean, yeah,
I can't
sure.
use any of the music in the background. Just imagine.
Oh, yeah, you know, right.
Think about.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, right. Well, I'm a huge Miles Davis fan, and I'm also a Navitimer owner and Breitling fan, so I can take a swing at this one. This is the Navitimer B09 Chronograph 41 Tribute to Miles Davis. There's certainly a long name for this watch. It kind of looks like, you know, big surprise, a Navitimer. It's got the yep. contrasting white subdials. In this case, it's using the Twin Jet Breitling logo on the dial, which I love the Twin Jet logo. I think it just looks
it's very cool,
super sharp. Mm-hmm. It comes with what I think quite cool is the Air Racer bracelet, which, you know, you see historically. I don't know that I've ever seen one in person, but it's that... I think, you know, I've seen people like Serge Gainsbourg, who was known to have worn, I think it was a Navitimer, on this kind of bracelet. I've seen them on some other watches over the years. It was a very kind of 50s, 60s look. It's almost like a cuff. Almost reminds me of like the Olongapo, you know, kind of dive bracelets from the Vietnam era. But it's got these big rally holes. But it uses these kind of hinged links for a little more comfort and adjustability. Also comes with rubber. Also comes with a leather strap. And it's got the Breitling, you know, the in-house B09 hand wound chronograph movement in it. It's limited to 500 pieces.
Yep.
And I mean, other than that, I mean, to me, it's a Navitimer. I mean, with kind of a limited edition kind of hook to yep. it. related to Miles Davis, because Miles Davis wore one, which I think is cool. Yeah. I mean, you see old pictures of him playing the trumpet wearing an Avitimer, which I think is a really neat choice.
Yeah. Yeah. 41 by 13 by 14 by 47.1. The 500 piece LE, like you said, is one option. And then that gets you 2 years subscription to this Breitling Social Club thing. If you want to go hog wild, you can get the 3-piece box set, which comes in like a trumpet box, and then it gives you a steel with the black, so the standard black version, a yellow gold with a black dial, 18 karat yellow gold, and then a blue dial in platinum. So you get 3 versions of this watch, which is inspired by that 806 Mark V that Miles wore. But this would give you all 3 in one box. To be clear, whether you buy one or you buy the box set, I don't know the pricing. That's the one thing I haven't gotten back from Breitling. At this time, I have the press release and the images. I think this is an absolutely gorgeous watch. I think the bracelet looks really cool. I'm not a fan of Miles Davis, but I'm not a fan. Like, I don't sit and listen. It's not my jam, so to speak. I do like the Navitimer. I like that they stuck to a normal style. I love, or a normal size in the 41 millimeter. And I think that Twin Jet logo looks very cool. And the bracelet absolutely rips. That said, not sure what the pricing will be on these. Like you said, Jason, it's 500 in the standard steel or 50 pieces total of the trio with the box set that also gets you a lifetime membership to this social club thing that they're doing.
Crazy. I just can't imagine buying 3 of the same watch. I mean, regardless of the different metals and kind of subtle changes, it's just wild.
Oh, it's like you've never met a Daytona owner.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a market for these things, and certainly at least some of that market must be an overlap with like very hardcore collectors of sort of Miles Davis stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Cool watch nonetheless, and nice to see Breitling in the mix. And then kind of Breitling adjacent is the relaunch of Galet, which I think falls pretty squarely in sort of the upper end of the stuff that we sort of talk about with some frequency. So Galet is now part of the Breitling group of brands, the House of Brands. And so you have the 200th anniversary, which is now relaunching the brand. And that is going to be, I guess it's about, it's 4 groups of watches and then a trio of watches that use different movements. So we can kind of move through these progressively, I guess. The first one on my list, whether it's the first on yours, I don't know, is the Galet Flying Officer Chronograph. It's a 40 by 15 by 46.5 chronograph. It's 100 meters water resistance and starts at $4,400. This is the smaller of the chronograph options in the core group, which go to 41 and 42 as well. Not sure why they wouldn't all just use the same case, but you know, I'm not a watchmaker. 100 meters of water resistance, like I said, these use what's called the Galet 23, which is an SW, so Salida 510 chronograph movement, and these start at $4,400. I actually rather like the black dial, especially with the red markings and then the 12-hour bezel around the outside. These look very... You know, it makes sense that these are from the world and made by Breitling and now relaunched by the same people that understand Breitling and Galet's histories, if that makes sense. So you also have Universal Genève, you'll have Breitling in the middle, and then you kind of have Galet coming in at just under $3,000. So any specific notes on these ones that kind of have like a world time bezel or Riet?
Well, you know, I have a friend that has a vintage version of this. He lives in Australia, and I haven't actually talked to him about this, but I've seen his in person, and I'm happy to see Galet come back. It's quite a relaunch. It's an ambitious relaunch. I mean, there's just a lot of watches here, and kind of different levels and stories. I'm happy to see these come in at a fairly affordable rate. I mean, these Flying Officer chronographs are $4,400, so it's certainly not chicken feed here, but you know, you move on to like the automatic, which at $2,900, that becomes a little more accessible. It's probably my least favorite of the whole bunch, to be honest with you, but you know, there seems to be something for everybody here in this mix.
Yeah, I mean, predicting what would be your usual comments on the internet, at least from the staff at Hodinkee, we were surprised at the price point being under $5,000 for the chronograph in 40 millimeters. 15 millimeters people are going to say is way too thick. Look at the feedback that 38 millimeter Speedmaster got, which I tried on and it wore fine, I thought.
Yeah.
It didn't wear thin, but it didn't wear poorly either. I think these are the kind of things that I would reserve a huge amount of my feedback until I see them in person. These are just little, you know, 2D renders that we have so far.
Yeah.
But yes, there is then the Flying Officer Automatic 40, which is 40 millimeters by 10.7 by 47.5. Also uses a what they're calling a Galley 17, which starts as an SW200, 100 meters water resistance, and starts at 2,900. There's sort of an orange and green model and a blue and white model. I think the chronograph for me is more successful. There's more to kind of fill it out.
Yeah.
But I think those work. And then I think we get into towards what might be some of the more popular stuff. I'm not really sure what will spark joy for folks waiting for Galley to come back. But we have a 42 millimeter, the Galley Multicron Pilot Chrono, 42 by 11.3, nice and thin. 45.6 millimeters lug to lug. That uses, again, this Galley 23, which is an SW510, also $4,400 and has 100 meters of water resistance. I think the black one looks great.
Yeah, I do too. Why do you think it uses the same movement as the Flying Officer? I'm curious why the big difference in thickness. I mean, I'm guessing you don't have insider information. I'm just wondering what the difference is.
It's a great question. Yeah. I don't know. Hmm. I mean, let me double check my numbers just in case I wrote something down wrong. Hmm. 15.02.
Wow. So,
like I said, we're rounding to a single additional digit. So that puts us at 15. I'm not sure. Who knows the difference here? I do not know.
Yeah.
And then if 42 is too big for you, but 40 is too small, guess what? There's a Galley Multicron Sport Chronograph 41. This one's 13.9 millimeters thick and 42.9 lug to lug. So quite a square profile on this. I think these are quite handsome, especially the black, orange, white option. 100 meters water resistance also uses this Galley 23 and starts at $4,400. Of the group, if I were trying to call out what would be the most popular, I would imagine it's probably going to be these, the Chronograph 41, but I don't know. People may also balk at 13.9.
Yeah.
Thickness seems to be a real thing. If it's a watch that I've owned before and I knew it was too thick previously and I have the reference, I get it, but these are brand new watches. It's hard to say how they will wear. So I would say, you know, reserve some judgment for getting a chance to see them in person, but that's kind of the quote unquote standard modern run. So they start at 2,900. The majority of all of the chronographs are at 4,400. And then it's a few hundred dollars more for any given watch if you want a bracelet.
Mm, yeah.
Jason, do you have a favorite among these eight?
For sure, the Pilot Chrono 42. To me, that's a sweet spot of size. It feels very kind of Speedmaster. Yep. You know, you've got the 42 millimeter case with 11 millimeters thick and decent lug to lug. And I'm a sucker for kind of a reverse panda dial and a 12 hour bezel and those classic mushroom pushers, I think just look spot on to me.
Yeah. I think it's a good looking thing for sure. I agree with the black model with the 12 hour bezel and all that, in the Pilot Chrono 42, it'd be interesting to see if they eventually can express that, you know, maybe do the same design, but in 38, 39, or if it's something where the Flying Officer Chronograph at 40 kind of covers that base for them.
Yeah.
You know, relaunching a brand is a massive task. And, you know, this is the same group that relaunched Universal Genève last year, or I guess more effectively fully earlier this year. So they have some experience with this. And I think these designs are largely successful kind of modern translations of Galley designs. So no problem there. And then I think where a lot of certainly the Hodinkee audience and probably a lot of folks listening here will be the most dialed in are this trio of the Galley Classics, which includes a tribute to the Multicron Yachting Big Eye, a tribute to the Multicron 45, and a tribute to the Multicron Silver Light. All three of these are 38 millimeters by 12.5 by 46. So probably the most middle of the road sizing of all these watches. And let me just double check. They're all that size, 33, 12.5, 46. And all of them retail for $6,700 for the extra money. You're moving to a Breitling manufacturer BO9, same movement that was in the Miles Davis we just spoke about. But otherwise, Jason, I think these are gorgeous. I think my preference might actually be the Multicron 45, the sort of black dial. I figure you're in for the big eye.
Yeah, you're certainly right. I mean, I think I'm a sucker for a regatta style watch, and that flash of color just looks great. All three of them look good. I think, just to kind of play against type, I think lighter dialed kind of silvery chronographs, I think, look great. So I think the silver dial one, the silver light looks would be my second choice in these this trio. The Black Dial just kind of has a bit more of a, I don't want to say generic, but it, you know, has that sort of classic kind of 60s chronograph look.
Sure.
But yeah, cool pieces. And not a horrible price for you know what you get with the Breitling movement and the great size and kind of the heritage of Gallet. These are great.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what are we, within $25 of a Black Bay Chrono 39?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Which uses a Breitling derived movement.
Mm-hmm.
Its connection or similarity to the B09, I can't speak to without, you know, sitting down and doing some Googling. These come in at a great size. I think all three are quite handsome. All three are quite different.
Yeah.
Of the lineup, I think these should get and probably will get the lion's share of the attention from like the core watch nerd audience. Not too thick, not too wide. Three very different versions. Solid movement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are winners for sure. And I think these are kind of, like I said, I guess get to be the flagships for a brand that I guess is going to top out around $7,000, at least in the current context, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. You know, I think a lot of people didn't know what to expect for the price when it came to UG.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see the Gallet stuff. And I mean, I'm not even that much of a chronograph guy, and I like all three of the classics.
Yeah. 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 Same yeah. here. Yeah.
Cool stuff.
Yeah. George Kern is no dummy. The guy knows what he's doing with
he's figuring it out. Yeah, he's right. figuring it out as he goes. I think, you know, obviously, you know, what I would like him to bring back and do more of is just more aerospace. But it's my understanding that Breitling is quite specifically not doing a lot of quartz, which, you know, doesn't put me in a great stead, but that doesn't mean it's not been quite successful for them as they've iterated upon those products. Yeah. So yeah, should be a good one. Another one, I'd be pumped to see any of these in person. So hopefully in the next couple months, I get some time in a room with a table and that sort of thing and get a chance to try them on wrist.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have two more brands to talk about here. Two very TGN brands here, Oris and Zin. Which one do you want to hit first?
Oris and Zin. Yeah. How about I'll do the Oris and you can do the Zin?
Sure thing. Yeah.
All right, so the Oris launched several watches, a new bronze ProPilot, a 29mm pointer date, and another of the Muppets-themed watches. And none of those felt super core to our world, but the last or one of the other major launches they had did feel kind of dialed in, which is the Oris Social Club 2. And this is obviously the second edition designed with Oris's Social Club, which is an international group of Oris fans. This one is based on the 43.5mm Aquis Relief as a starting point and then gets sort of a silver-toned, shimmery sort of dial. One that in the renders, I'm not quite sure what it looks like in person, but I think it looks quite good with the kind of steel of the case. And then as an interesting turn, and it's, according to their press release, the first time they've done this in over a decade, is they fitted sort of a green NATO-style strap to the Aquis. So there are lug adapters because the Aquis has proprietary style lugs that then allow you to, you know, slide a nylon strap in there. So it comes on a green, olive green sort of nylon strap, which I think is the part that caught my eye the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, my experience with the 43.5 Aquis is it's doesn't wear as big as other watches at 43.5, but it's not a small watch either.
Yeah.
I would compare it in many ways to the way that like some of the larger Doxa stuff wears,
mm-hmm.
where you can tell it's kind of above maybe the core of what I normally wear. It's not uncomfortable, but it's big, if that makes sense. And I think this is a good looking watch. They're putting it on the market for 2,100 Swiss francs.
Yeah, another, I mean, it's Oris continues to be a good value and popular. I was not aware of the Social Club myself, but you know, regardless, it is a good looking watch. I think the thing about the larger size watches, regardless of how they wear visually is or comfort wise, really comes down to the weight, especially when it's a steel watch. A steel watch in 43.5 starts to feel quite heavy, especially like a dive watch that has some heft to it. I think, you know, something like this in titanium, you know, the titanium Aquis or whatever is just going to be would just be more comfortable. But you know, I was drawn to the strap adapters with the NATO strap on this.
I thought it would look cool.
Yeah, really cool, right? Yeah.
So yeah, my apologies to the folks at Oris. I don't know a ton about the Social Club either. If you Google it up, it looks like they did a Diver 65 as the Oris Social Club Canada at one point, a 40mm Diver 65. It looks like they're all different versions. So there's a Beijing, a Bangkok.
Oh, okay.
All right, so I guess it's modified depending on where you're buying it. But it looks like version one was a sort of white silver dial, black bezel take. Actually, quite a handsome looking watch, to be fair. Mm. This is a good looking thing. Nice expression of the Diver 65, but of a 40mm Diver 65.
Fun stuff. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, with the aura sorted, that leaves us just the Zin. What did Zin pack in for the end of summer?
Yeah, this one's a really oddball, and it's caused a lot of head-scratching in early comments that I've seen today. This is their EZM-19. It stands for Einsatzzeitmesser, which means mission timer in German. This is number 19, so they've done a lot of these over the years. They all have very specific functions to them or audiences, and in this case, I guess what's most striking about this watch is... So this is a 41-millimeter watch, 11.4 millimeters thick, in bead-blasted stainless steel. It's got a Tegament steel black bezel, and it uses an SW300 automatic movement. A lot of this kind of the Zin technology you know about, the AR humidity-absorbing capsule in the side of the case, the integrated rubber strap. And this one has this I think the most... kind of noticeable thing right out of the gate with this one is this dial with this giant 4 and 8 on it.
Yeah.
Which I think has a lot of people kind of confused, myself included. The bezel itself it counts up. It's a time-elapsed bezel from 0 up to, I guess you could say, 40 minutes or 35.
Yeah, 35, yeah.
And then it's a countdown. They've got an STD, which Stunden in German means hours, 4, 3, 2, 1. So the last... what would that be? Third of the bezel is a countdown from 4 hours to 0. And the explanation that Zin gives is that in many kind of command, mission command situations, 4 hours is kind of a critical period of time for counting down. That's all well and good. I'm still a little confused about the 4 and the 8 on the dial because, dial is not really as relevant when you're actually kind of timing something, whether it's a dive watch or any other kind of thing. Maybe it's just a stylistic thing on this one, which strikes me as a little unusual for Zin because they tend to be more function first.
Or it's separating the hour markers into 4 hour chunks, which I guess then you could coordinate against the 4 hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
Sort of timer on the bezel. I guess you're setting that to your hour hand. I'll be honest. I read over this a couple times and obviously I love Zin. I'm a big fan. I don't think I understand this watch, but I also didn't, like they say there's lots of opportunities to use this 4 hour, 40, 20 minute, sort of slice of, because 20 minutes of a dial is also 4 hours of a dial. Mm-hmm. And I would need like one or two examples I think would have gone a long way for me understanding what they were shooting for here.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's definitely nothing lazy about this design. It's very specific to the point where like, I almost feel like I'm looking at a, like the first time I looked at a Hamilton Crosswind.
Oh, right.
or a Navitimer, and you go like, wait, what are all the bits for?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is like, there's less, but maybe at the same time, more going on. And I guess it's, maybe you think of a lot of it as like the maximum of 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You think back to other EZMs, whether it's for helicopter pilots or firefighting or special forces, and they all had some sort of explainer like, hey, this thing does these three or four features or the bezel does this for this reason.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of this is more like we got a high level explanation of what it's capable of doing, but not how that's rooted in necessarily the real world.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe I don't think it's in the press release, at least not that I noticed. All right, and I don't believe we have a price for this, but assuming that hits Watch Buys or Zin's website by the time this episode is launched in a few days, we will add it. So just check the show notes if you're really keen on an EZM-19. I'm pumped to see what they do for 20, that's for sure.
Yeah.
They're always very distinctive, and I think they nailed it here.
Mm-hmm.
I need to sit with the text and try and think of the ways that I could use this bezel to... help with various things. Like my first thing was like, oh, maybe like Pomodoro timer, but that's too short. That sort of thing. Like, I'm not doing mission briefings and
yeah, right.
that sort of thing. Perhaps thankfully, I can't imagine I'd be good at any of that.
We'll have to come up with a TGN 4 hour something or other.
For sure. I mean, it does something for Pip at 8. There's a giant 8 to help.
Oh,
you
there we there. Go. Oh, yeah. Right.
it's a cool looking thing that the giant 8 and 4 will make it one of the most distinctive watches sort of in their catalog for a while. And the EZM stuff is always just so specific to a given task or need. So, yeah, cool thing. Yeah. Good on Zin for that. And yeah, I think that rounds up all the new watches that we wanted to cover. Obviously, there's maybe some that we missed or some that come out shortly after this episode, and we'll catch them on a future one. And if you're listening and you think we missed a watch that you're really pumped about, let us know in the Slack. We'll have the conversation there. Thankfully, this is just sort of the first wave of new watches, which is you see them in digital form, press releases and images and that sort of thing. And then the next couple of months, hopefully we get to see stuff hands-on, whether it's Toronto or New York or otherwise.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into to final notes. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I've got two this week, so I can bracket yours.
Sure.
Actually, you know what? Let's make it three. Let's have a little bit of fun. I can eat a little bit of crow here. I was chatting with Tom Place about a movie that came out last Friday, and that's The Dog Stars. And then he goes, yeah, you know, because Jason recommended it on Book Club.
Yeah,
a long time, quite a while ago, and I had no memory of that. So I haven't seen the movie yet this week, but I did read the book in like 24 hours. It's very good.
So good. It's so good. Yeah.
So that's Peter Heller, The Dog Stars. It's now been turned into a movie from Ridley Scott, one of our favorites, with several great actors. I mean, we're talking Guy Pearce and Josh Brolin, Jacob Elordi, and Margaret Qualley. And I mean, really, the book only has about seven people in it. So that's a pretty stacked cast to begin with. I love pretty much every page, every turn of this book. And if anything, it was so good in the first two thirds or even three quarters that I'm not sure how the ending would have made me happy. And they got as close as they could. They did a good job. Fantastic book. And hopefully the movie will be good. I'm not that worried about whether the movie's good or bad because the book is so good.
Mm-hmm.
So consider it now co-signed, you know, well over 2 years later or something from one of the book clubs some time ago. But that's the first one. The next one, a really fun, I have two heads up for September 4th. And the first one, if you're in North America, I believe it's actually late on September 3rd. And that's the return of the Grand Tour. One third of the hosting contingent is Thomas Holland, who's been on the show a couple times. Then we have James Engelsman, who's his co-host on the great YouTube channel Throttle House. And then finally, we have Francis Bourgeois, who you'd know from Trainspotting and lots of really fun car videos with Chris Harris recently. And if you're unsure of his automotive bona fide, you can definitely check out the recent episode of The Intercooler with all three of the new hosts. I'm exceptionally excited for this, and I think it's going to be an absolute blast. I don't know that they could have picked better hosts at all. The three of them seem to have really good chemistry and are really funny, and I'm hoping that people give them a chance. I'm certainly prepared to, and I know my daughters are very excited to have the kind of big car adventures back. My daughters have seen all of the original trio's sort of big adventures through Top Gear and then the Grand Tour. So I'm super pumped for that. That's on Prime. If you don't have a subscription to Prime, this is one awesome reason to get it. And like I said, I believe all six episodes of the first season drop on the 4th, which may or may not be, to my understanding from what they've said on social media, it'll be the evening of the 3rd. So when you hear this later tonight, if you're listening early, you could watch it as many as your heart's desire, up to six.
Wow. Nice. Do you have any insider information as to whether Throttle House will continue with Grand Tour?
Oh, Throttle House is absolutely continuing. Still running now. Crazy. And is not going away. They've slowed their pace a little bit.
Yeah.
But the show is absolutely still running, and it's still one of the channels where anything they put out, I will watch. They've done a couple more like podcasty episodes recently, including one where, like Thomas, I got very angry listening to it about like the 10 things you shouldn't do or 10 things that if you do, you're a bad driver. But yeah, the channel's still going, and I think they're still producing some great stuff. They did a video just recently with Francis Bourgeois' Honda Jazz, which out here we would know as a Fit, that he has, like, all of it underneath is a Type R motor transmission. Like, it's the most sleeper thing ever because it's like a pink Honda Jazz with this insane motor and transmission and suspension and all that. So a couple of great ones for sure.
Yeah.
And then nice. I'll share my third and final after you've gotten to yours.
Yeah, sure. Well, sticking with videos and YouTube and whatnot, I was recently turned on by Brad W. on Slack to a series, a YouTube creator named Martin Doulard, a Dutchman, who is a graphic designer by day and a photographer. Actually, I don't know if it's by day anymore. He might have given that up, given his success on YouTube.
He looks busy during the day.
Yeah, he's got... maybe he moonlights as a graphic designer. Yeah. I don't know. But he's got this great playlist on his YouTube channel, and he's got 838,000 subscribers, so chances are anyone listening here probably already knows about him, or you've heard about him on Slack. This specific playlist called Life at the Cabin is a series of 220 videos that Christy and I started watching just this last week, and every night now we sit and watch like 3 or 4 episodes. And Martin did some research and found an old kind of duo of stone cabins in the Italian Alps, and set out to restore them and kind of make them his home. And it's, you know, there are plenty of videos like this on YouTube, you know, people kind of building cabins in the woods. We've talked about a few in the past. I would put this kind of in an elevated category. I would almost say this is kind of almost a modern day Dick Prenicky version. Less Spartan. He's not making his own tools necessarily, but his kind of consideration of things and kind of the patience with which he does his tasks and takes the time out to go on hikes and visit with some neighbors. And there's a certain quietness to the videos, and it's beautifully produced and shot. He clearly knows what he's doing. There's some good drone footage and just kind of wide angle stuff of the Alps. And I just love watching him work. I think it's kind of a genre of video that I just like, whether it's somebody rebuilding an engine on a car or building a cabin or whatever. And it's really great. And I did happen to kind of cheat and skip ahead and kind of look at thumbnails of future episodes. And lo and behold, I don't know, must be like 130 episodes in, he actually buys an old Land Rover Series 3 with a little truck cab on it, which I was thrilled to see. So I'm going to be patient and wait to get to that episode. But highly recommend this, as did Brad W. on Slack. So thanks, Brad, for bringing that up on Slack. And I can't recommend this enough. It's just a tremendous, tremendous viewing. And if you're just looking for something quiet in the evening to kind of calm you down from a busy day, the episodes range between, you know, 20 minutes and 40 minutes. So good stuff.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, I pulled up the page while you were chatting there and immediately subscribed. Brand new to me, but sounds like a great recommendation. And I'm always in for, yeah, like you said, a little bit of calming Dick Prenicky-esque content to end my day. I end Sunday nights with Lioness, and it's kind of like going to bed with two clenched fists.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I should change my speed on that one. But yeah, that looks great. And for my final... this week is an album that comes out, if you're listening to this right on Thursday, it comes out tomorrow, September 4th. It is called King of Having Fun from a band called Medium Build, which is this guy, Nick. And I've been listening to Medium Build for, I guess, a couple of years now. I kind of found them through Instagram, and I've been listening to it nonstop for about 2 weeks. And I absolutely love it. If you're in the zone for... I don't know, like, what would the vibe be? There's some War on Drugs in there for sure. There's some stuff that just kind of links back. If you imagine the soundtrack for like the first season of Scrubs, if that sounds like you would like any of those songs, there's elements of that in there. I think his songwriting is really lovely. There's definitely some stuff I'll be listening to on this album for a very long time. And then what's become a real favorite of mine is the ability to essentially listen to an entire album rather than jumping around or trying to get Tidal to pick a playlist where one in every 5 songs are even close to the one we started with, which I just find. So this one you can just kind of put on and let it play through. And it's absolutely excellent. So if you're a fan, I think you can pick up exactly what the album's about within 1 or 2 songs. But if you're looking for a new album, September 4th, King of Having Fun should be on all of the streaming services. There's also a few like teaser tracks or pre-launch tracks on YouTube. And then he also went on Speed, which we've talked a ton about in the past, and did a couple of a live performance from the garage where they record the podcast.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good stuff.
All right. This was great watches to talk about today and some good final notes. I'm really, really
for sure. Books and TV and YouTube and music. Nailed it all.
Yeah. All right.
Well, look, as always, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or even consider supporting the show directly, maybe even grab yourself a new TGN signed NATO or access to the TGN Slack, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Mark Twain, who said, "Switzerland would be a mighty big place if it were ironed flat."